I guess you would. Hello, Craig.
Yeah, hi, Jeff. How are you?
You doing all right?
Yeah, good, mate. Yeah.
Beautiful. Now, you're going to talk about something this morning which is very close to our heart, because South Australia is, we're very well endowed when it comes to wind power. I think we've got more in South Australia than the rest of the country has combined. And you reckon it's a fraud.
Yep. I was listening to June's comments before about the mining tax, and I thought, you know, if you're Prime Minister and you offer the mines a choice, the miners, the mining companies a choice, and says, listen, you can either choose the mining tax or you can run your entire mining operation using windmills,
right,
but you can't hook up to the grid.
Mm.
And what would you think they would do?
I think they'd jump at the tax.
You're right. Because, look, the problem with wind power is it's dependent on the wind to start with.
Yep.
And what the press release that I just put out was reporting on an organisation, the Australian Energy Market Operator, that showed that from the period of the 13th to the 20th of May, that the entire windmill output right across the east coast, not just here or there, was next to zero. So here you have, if you are relying upon refrigeration, or you're relying on your economy, to industrial economy, to run on the wind blowing, you're stuffed. So here we have to have not only these very expensive windmills sitting there not operating, but you always have to have a backup system for these windmills.
So for one week, essentially, there's no wind power being generated.
That's right.
Isn't
that's not an inconsistent problem. There's many days right throughout the year where these windmills don't actually function. And in fact, you know, they get rated at like 1.5 megawatts, which sounds like a huge amount of energy, but their energy efficiency in any period of time is only about 20%. So you can't rely on these things for a stable energy supply. So if you're trying to run a high energy operation like a mine with crushers and conveyor belts and things like that, you know, lighting and all that sort of thing, you can't rely on wind power, so therefore why would you want to run an entire economy on them?
Mm.
Now, that's the idea, that's the thrust that's being put forward to the people that live in the cities. But there's another insidious aspect to these things, which doesn't get really reported, and people have very romantic ideas about these things, you know, sitting on top of hills and slowly rotating.
Very pretty.
And that's the wind. That's actually the noise pollution that comes from them. Now, I didn't realise that these things create such enormous amounts of noise pollution, but they create what's called pressure waves.
Have you sat under one?
No, but I've been reading all these reports from people, particularly over here in Victoria.
Well, sit under one. I've sat under one. It's fantastic. And I tell you what, I didn't get any migraines, and they're very peaceful, the beautiful thing. I don't know what... And look, I've heard about these things as well. You know, some people say it's doing their head in, this sub, I can't think of, what were you calling it? The sound?
The pressure waves.
The pressure waves.
There's several different types of them.
Yeah, I don't buy that. I don't know. So I think it's psychosomatic that people are firing.
There's too many people now, Jeff, that are complaining about them, particularly over here in Queensland, in Victoria, where they put these things up and they wonder why they can't sleep at night. Because the marketing says that, the noise from these things is masked by natural background noises. Well, the frequencies are so low, it's not the case. And that's the problem with noise. If the frequencies are low, like these pressure waves, then they do cause health problems related to unable to sleep, restlessness, and so forth.
Mm.
Now, look, these things are promoted. They're promoted in the cities as green power. Look, we need to save the environment. This is great. It's one of the biggest frauds out for the amount of money that has to go into propping these inefficient power generation units up. And see, the people in the cities, the urban areas, are paying extra now on their electricity bills in order to be able to fund these things.
Yeah, so for that week, everyone up and down the east coast to buying their green energy.
Off coal producers.
That's right. That's why they'd lose sleep over that.
Well, that's why, if you get a better solution, which we've promoted a lot on your show, is this idea of nuclear power.
Well, hang on, let's back on the wind thing. Proponents would say, look, yeah, sure, it can't blow all the time everywhere. That's why you actually need, for the wind power thing to work, you need 20 times more, you know, cover the entire country with them. So if you have a quiet patch in the Yarra Valley, that's all good, because we're pumping here in South Australia and Queensland's going off. Or it's quiet over in WA, that's fine. The Northern Territory is, you know, windy as hell. You know, if you cover the entire country, then the positives would, like the windy bits would hopefully more than make up for the quiet, for the calm bits, I suppose.
I think people don't understand the geometry or the amount of land that these things take up. And it's a huge amount of land to have wind generators stuck out in the middle of hills or whatever, because you have to have something in the vicinity of, I think, so I'm looking at the figures here, 231 metre spacing between the turbines. Now, that actually has to be more than that because you have to allow a clear wind flow. So to have a 1.5 megawatt or 2 megawatt wind turbine operating at 20% at the best of time, you need to cover an enormous amount of area of land in order to be able to generate enough electricity to even meet a fraction, a very small fraction of the demand of the cities.
Mm.
So, look, you're talking about, if you took, for example, a 2,500 megawatt nuclear reaction, reactor power station, that's 2,500 as opposed to 1.5 megawatts.
We don't really need nuclear power. We've got all the coal in the world and all the gas in the world. Why do we need to go for the nuclear stuff?
Well, look, it comes to the type of energy, Jeff. I mean, you've got wind, you've got solar, which are regarded as renewables, but they're very low density. They're very low energy flux density in the sense of the type of power that they actually yield.
Yep.
The actually most efficient form of solar collector is actually green leaf and plant, because the chlorophyll molecule picks up the sunlight and transfers it into starches that are then eaten by animals and created into, and the energy is actually trapped in the whole cycle of life. Now, as you move up the energy flux density scale, you then go to burning wood and then burning coal or gas, and that gives you a certain amount of energy at any particular point as you burn those particular fuels.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get up to nuclear fuels, you actually have a much, much higher density of energy that allows you to run industrial processes far, far more efficiently, and therefore the amount of area that you need in order to be able to get the sort of energy that you need is much, much smaller. The type of energy means you can have more industrial processes run through nuclear power than you can through coal fire or gas fire power stations. But as they're doing in France now, they're building the next generation of nuclear power, which is the nuclear fusion Tomahawk reactors and things like that, which is the
fusion.
They're trying to replicate the process of what takes place on the surface of the sun, fusion.
It's still a theory. No one's ever done it, though.
No, they actually have produced fusion. I mean, fusion's not a mystical thing. It's what the sun does. It's the process of the fusion of helium or hydrogen atoms, right, where you liberate enormous amounts of energy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as human beings, as scientific and technological development, actually look at achieving in the future.
But in terms of doing it economically, it takes more power, more energy that you've got to pump in to create fusion than you get out at the moment. I mean, remember the big sensation about cold fusion a few years ago?
Here's
something we can do at room temperature, and you get all this free energy for almost nothing. And of course, that was a fraud. Fusion, you can do it in the lab, but it's uneconomical at this stage. I mean, I don't know, it took 50 years before they can figure
out? No, it won't be that fast. If you had a crash program on it, you could develop, you know, with two or three generations of actually usable fusion power. But the amount of energy you get out of the process once it's started, and there's certain confinement requirements for magnetic fields and all sorts of things. Yeah, that takes energy, but the amount of energy coming from the fusion reaction itself means you have a whole new host of industrial processes that can be used or potentially used that we haven't even dreamt of yet. You think about, go back 100 years ago to the beginning of the 20th century, you know, 1900, and just think about what technology was. You had the beginning of the motor vehicle. You know, electricity was sort of just coming online, but it wasn't around all over the place.
Yep.
There were no telephones at that point, no radar, you know, no jet engines. And look what happened over that 100-year period of technological development. Well, that is what mankind is capable of doing. So if you take the point that we are here now and have a commitment to really developing new physical principles of what exists in the universe now, where are we going to be in 100 years?
Yeah,
we don't
know. Yeah, good call. Now, who's driving? Look, if wind power is such a fraud, who's driving it? Well, the wind power companies, just because they want to make some money?
Well, actually, I don't think they make much money out of wind power at all. It actually costs them money again.
Well, the people who put up the things, I mean, they must.
Well, it's been a scam. It's a scam that's being run as part of the whole environmentalist globalization nexus of shutting down industrial production in most countries. And it's marketed on the idea of environmentalism, that you've got to have this environmentally friendly power. It's not environmentally friendly.
I'm just waiting for Prince Philip's name to come up.
Well, he's a key guy in the environmental movement,
yes.
You know. I mean, the point is that you have people like Prince Philip, you have others in this country, like the Australian Conservation Foundation has come forward and, you know, told us, actually they made a submission to the government to make population growth the equivalent of a noxious pest like cane toads and rabbits. Now, their intention is to reduce the world's population. That's what is going to take place in the near term if we don't actually turn the lack of commitment to scientific and technological development around in this world today. But they intend to reduce the world's population down from 6.8 billion that we are now to below 2 billion.
Mm.
And that's his stated aim. That's what Prince Philip has stated on numerous occasions.
Mm, I like it. But anyway, we won't go there.
No, you don't like it. You like the benefits of having population, like living in Adelaide. You know, you like the healthcare. You like the services that are provided in dense areas.
Yeah.
Right? And the problem is that we haven't developed the inland of our country anywhere near enough with the sorts of infrastructure that are available for us, like high-speed rail and power, nuclear power and water.
How are you going to make people? You'd build a city, and I think they've done it in China. They built a city, but no one came because people were happy where they were. Look, at the moment, over the last 100 years, we've seen people do the whole the coastal thing. You know, we're the most concentrated around the edges country in the world pretty well because everyone wants to live near the ocean one way or another. So you build a terrific metropolis in the middle of whoop whoop, but who'd want to live there?
I heard about that and I asked the question, so what sort of infrastructure have they got to get to and from that city from other population centres? And they haven't built anything.
It's not about getting to or from, but who wants to live in the middle of nowhere, essentially?
Well, if there's an industry there that the city's being built around, Jeff, because there's demand for the labour, that's where the reason to stay there comes. And I believe that particular city isn't built around any particular industry. It was just created in China for the sake of building a city, from my knowledge.
The only thing we're not factoring in is the human, the X factor, the gooey factor in terms of livability and sentimentality and lifestyle. You know, I'm sure you could set up the high-speed rail and have terrific industries, but if no one wants to live near Alice Springs because it's so far away from the rest of anywhere, then the gooey, icky stuff is going to stop anyone from living there.
There's been 20 years of shutting down the rural communities through to destroying family farming in this country.
Yeah.
And we've moved to cooperative farming, you've got free trade, and you've basically, today, we've lost over 50% of our family farms, which is the backbone of the rural industry.
No, I'm just talking about, if you build a city of, say, 600,000 people near Charleville, you wouldn't get anyone moving there. No. Even if you had all the jobs in the world, people go, I don't want to live in Charleville.
I think you're wrong. If you had high-speed transportation corridors that make Charleville, 6 hours from Melbourne by high-speed rail, I mean, you've got to...
We can't get people to take jobs in Murray Bridge, which is an hour out of Adelaide, because it's just too far. I mean, that's the comfort factor. People are, it's a beautiful thing that people are spoilt for choice, really, in this country. They go, that hour, that's too far. So,
I think some people would travel that particular distance, but again, it depends on what infrastructure is, healthcare and so forth. In Murray Bridge, I don't know the area, unfortunately, well enough.
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying, but all I'm saying is just in terms of the lifestyle, you know, the cruise,
What's happening here is that you're getting a lot of people moving into the cities because of the lack of actual real services like healthcare is one of the big ones in the rural areas. And I mean, obstetricians, gynecologists in the bush unheard of now. The liabilities attached to having babies in the bush is scary. So what happens is people say, well, you know, if I have to tolerate this all the time, I'm afraid to live out here because there's no services. Therefore, I want to move close to the city. And you have we've had it for quite a long time, a deliberate shutdown of the rural sectors, and our country towns have literally died. And the industries that could have been there have been taken away. But again, without real high-speed train networks, access to easy access to markets through decent infrastructure like high-speed train networks, you don't have the motivation for people to establish industries in remote areas or people to live there at any time. Yeah. Like I went to Dubbo, which is in the centre of New South Wales. It took me 8 hours to get there by plane and by car.
Mm.
We had a high-speed train. I could be in Dubbo within 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
That means that people in Dubbo could be in Melbourne in 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
If you had and that's really quite an exciting idea that you get people moving around because you break the tyranny of distance through the development of infrastructure, which is what we can do as human beings, as creative individuals.
Yeah, I'm going to have to leave it there. I guess we're not Holland. We do have some distance to cover, so that's a fair point.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, if people want to find out more, Craig?
Our website, Jeff, is www.cecaust.com.au, or our phone number is 1-800-636-432. Give us a tingle, and we're happy to send out information packs.
Good on you, Craig. I'll catch you next week.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff.
Cheers, mate. That's Craig Isherwood from the CEC. Wouldn't it be interesting? It'd be fun living in Holland. Everything would be about 5 minutes away. Back after this with more of your calls. 822-3000.
Are you a mushroom lover and have a favourite mushroom recipe? Do you like them on toast?